Alrighty. So this past year, we lost some great names. I'm just going to name some, right? Matthew Perry passed away. He drowned due to drug issues, health issues. We lost Bob Barker from natural causes at 90 years old. We lost Jimmy Buffett from a rare skin cancer. All different people, different walks of life, different causes. And while it's not in this past year, I want to tell you a very interesting story. Does anyone know of Fidel Castro? Does anyone know Fidel Castro? Like, I mean, you probably didn't, like, go to breakfast with him, but, like, did you know him? You know, like, yeah, yeah. For those of you that don't, Fidel Castro is a Cuban revolutionary and politician who led Cuba from 1959 to 2008. And he took over the Cuban government. And when he did that, he cut ties with the USA, both politically, economically, and then he started forming relations and friendships with the Soviet Union, who at that time we had some tension with. So, what did the CIA do as a response? They contributed to the total 634 assassination attempts on Fidel Castro. That is crazy. This man had 634 attempts on his life. So, here's what I find fascinating. How exotic these attempts got, how crazy they got, and how he somehow lived or managed to avoid them or whatever it was, right? So, let's go through a couple, just for fun. Just for fun. So, let's start with this one. Fidel Castro loved to smoke cigars. Just a pastime, just something he enjoyed doing, right? And so the CIA thought that if they could put some toxins in the cigars, that when he smoked them, he would die. Makes good sense. So they made this batch with toxins strong enough to kill a person the moment they put it in their mouth. And somehow Fidel Castro caught wind, never smoked those cigars. He's elusive. He's doing good. Here's one of my favorites. The intelligence officials thought that they could maybe use his love of scuba diving against him. They were like, man, if we can use this. He loves scuba diving. I mean, beautiful oceans around him, right? So let's, like, use this against him. And so they thought, if we paint a seashell in very vibrant, beautiful colors, and then we fill it with explosives, the moment he goes over and he looks at it, we can blow him up. Great plan, right? Well, so this one actually was discarded as impractical, and it never got off the ground. So they never even attempted it. Number three, another very funny one. They thought that if they could mess with Castro's beard, because he had great facial hair, they thought if they could mess with his beard, if they could cause him to lose his beard, then maybe the Cubans wouldn't respect him. They would see him as fallible and weak because he couldn't even keep his own beard, right? And so they had this half-baked scheme to use thallium salts, so it has the same chemical as the product Nair, a hair removal product. They wanted to use thallium salts by either putting it in his shoes or his cigar. Again, the cigars, right? And so in return, the chemical would either be absorbed through his feet or ingested through smoking the cigar, and all of his facial hair would fall out. Did it succeed? No. Don't know why, don't know how, just didn't succeed. And so you know what finally took Fidel Castro? What finally killed him? Natural causes at 90 years old. He lived through 634 assassination attempts, and natural causes took him out, old age. And the truth is, it does not matter who you are on this earth, whether you're an actor, a singer, whether you are an average Joe, or you are the dictator of Cuba. One way or another, death is a very real reality. It comes, and there's no need for us to panic, but there is need for us to live in light of this reality. Maybe you can tell by the lighthearted introduction, you know, what we just went through, but we're going back into Ecclesiastes. I don't know if you guys missed it or not, but we're going to finish what we started in Ecclesiastes. So as a refresher, Ecclesiastes is written by Koheleth, the teacher, and we commonly think that it is Solomon. And in this book is a lot of wisdom that tends to be quite honest and a little bit pessimistic. So before the Christmas season, we did the first 8 chapters. And now we are going to finish the last 4 chapters. The first 8 taught us 2 things, or established 2 things for us. One, the world is hevel. Hevel. This word means unpredictable, uncontrollable, temporary, meaningless. The world is hevel. It is like a vapor or a breath. The moment you breathe it out, it's there for a second, and then it vanishes, right? The first 8 chapters also made us acquainted with the phrase, under the sun. He repeats it over and over again. Under the sun, under the sun. The point is, everything under the sun. So if you think about it literally, right? The sun, everything under it. Everything below heaven amounts to nothing. So in essence, apart from God, he's saying our lives lack value, meaning, and purpose. And Solomon uses this perspective to address the matters of eternity. And today he is going to use it to address death. A very scary concept. And so if the reality is that physical death is unavoidable, then we must wrestle with what life is meant to accomplish. That's the idea today. That's what we're going to work through. But let's go ahead and hop into it. We've been talking about, let's hop into it. Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verse 1. We're going to do all 18 verses, and then we'll tie it all together. So let's start. Verse 1. Indeed, I took all this to heart and explained it all. The righteous, the wise, and their works are in God's hands. People don't know whether to expect love or hate. Everything lies ahead of them. So creation is quite clear in how it reveals God. And I say that, and some people may disagree with me. And this is my personal perspective, that if we look at the world around us, the mountains, the animals, the human body, all of these things provoke, for me at least, the thought of a deliberate and brilliant creator. Like, I don't think these things just happen by accident. There's so much beauty in how things sustain themselves. For example, our human body, if we have too much of something that's harmful, our body will cut it down. If we have too little of something that we need, our body will produce. It's brilliant. It's called homeostasis. It balances our body out. Or you can think about nature. I mean, plants were made with photosynthesis, or even how they reproduce and stay alive using bees. Like, that's crazy. And then some of those plants that you don't want to live, like that have the burrs that will stick onto you or animals, and then they'll drop somewhere else so that they can grow again. It's just so elaborate. I don't think there's something random about it. So creation is quite clear in how it reveals God, but I can't just look at the world around me and know how he feels about me. There's 2 different portions of that. I can't just look at the world and know how he feels about me. So we should not measure God's love by what happens in life. We measure God's love by what Jesus did at the cross. And that's what he says. Like, people don't know whether to expect love or hate, right? Like, we can't know. But life is hevel, as he's made at this point. It's unpredictable, uncontrollable, temporary, meaningless. But Jesus' work is definitive. It's absolute. It taught us of his absolute deep love for us and his deep hatred for sin. So Solomon keeps this premise, keep it in mind, under the sun. So excluding the reality of God, this is what happens on the earth. Here's what he said. Everything is the same for everyone. There's one fate for the righteous and the wicked, for the good and the bad, for the clean and the unclean, for the one who sacrifices and the one who does not sacrifice. As it is for the good, it is also for the sinner. As it is for the one who takes an oath, so also for the one who fears an oath. This is an evil in all that is done under the sun. There's one fate for everyone. Under the sun. Death is the end for every single person. It doesn't matter who you are, what your status is, what you have done, death. It continues to develop the idea that under the sun, life is truly meaningless, that nothing you do matters when your day of death comes. So are you a cutthroat businessman or woman who will do anything to make a profit? Death. Are you a person that has built, established, and runs orphanages? Death. Are you Hitler? Death. Are you Mother Teresa? Death. Everyone under the sun, everyone, but not everyone, because outside of the temporary, under the sun perspective, there's a true hope, a separator, the thing that defies death with life, a God that is above under the sun. So yes, everyone meets physical demise. That doesn't change. But not everyone will have the same result eternally. And this is actually hope. So keep in mind, because we're going to keep going through, Solomon is trying to drive home the fact that without God, this is how life is. So as we keep reading, we will continue to see the truth in what he is saying, and then we will examine the meaning behind the text. So the God behind the world, the hope behind the tragedy. So let's keep going. Verse 4. In addition, the hearts of people are full of evil, and madness is in their hearts while they live. After that, they go to the dead. I mean, we would affirm that, right? Wickedness is everywhere. We see people doing bad things all the time. But there is hope for whoever is joined with all the living, since a live dog is better than a dead lion. For the living know that they will die, but the dead don't know anything. So in the behind the text kind of thing, right? Hope for the living to still make an impact with their lives, to turn. That's why there's still hope for the living. Because once you're dead, you're dead. There's no longer a reward for them because the memory of them is forgotten. Their love, their hate, and their envy have already disappeared. And there is no longer a portion for them in all that is done under the sun. And knowing this, what he says here, knowing this should set us free. Because all that time with hate and with envy and trying to find love, keep it alive, we don't have to do that. It's not what he's calling us to do. That's not the whole purpose of our lives. All we have to do is this. Go. Eat your bread with pleasure and drink your wine with a cheerful heart, for God has already accepted your works. I mean, with such a view of life and death as he's presenting, joy is only found in the moment. And I see a little bit of humor here, right? It's like, all right, life is utterly meaningless. Our common destiny, prove it. So forget about it. Go have fun. Like, go eat bread, drink wine. You're good, you know? Don't worry about it, right? As if reality is not burdensome. But it's also the best that we can do. We cannot change that death will come for us one day, but we can enjoy the gifts that God has given us to his glory. And the ability to truly enjoy and glorify God over bread and wine, having a cheerful heart, those are gifts. One that not everyone gets. But those with God, who walk with God, truly do. And he's going to continue. Here's some more, right? Let your clothes be white all the time, and never let oil be lacking on your head. White garments and anointing oil make life more comfortable in a hot climate. So life is brief, right? Life is brief. So stop saving everything like it will last forever. Use the good china if you want to, right? You know, the best silverware. Dress in nice clothes if you desire. What if something will happen to him? I mean, something will happen to us. And then who will care about those perfect, unused clothes or the unused silverware, right? We got to live. Enjoy life with the wife you love all the days of your fleeting life, which has been given to you under the sun all your fleeting days. Another great gift, right? Enjoy companionship while you have it. Don't waste time envying or craving something that you do not. Enjoy it. For that is your portion in life and in the struggle under the sun. Portion, your slice, what God has allowed for you, which sets you free from thinking that you need other people's portions. God has given you one. Or being haughty about what we have, right? Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your strength, because there is no work, planning, knowledge, wisdom in Sheol, the grave, where you are going. The preacher continues to give this advice meant to make the best of a bad situation of life under the sun. The grave will cause us to cease from all these pleasures, all this work. And the idea is, don't put off living, church, because you only have so much time and you don't know when it ends. So even in work, do it mightily. Do it well. Do it to God's glory. Enjoy your spouse, your bread and wine now. Enjoy. Delayed living, this idea of like, I'll be really living when I get this. Or one day I'll start living when I finally get over this hurdle. One day I'll be happy. Delayed living is living in denial. Because death comes. Live now. Every day. The idea is that every day, the present day that we walk, breathe, live, move, have our being is a gift. Praise the Lord. Live now to his glory. And I said that death is the end, but in the reality of God's kingdom, the grave is actually a beautiful culmination, a beautiful collection of all of our work, knowledge, and wisdom. So even though salvation is not earned, like it's not like, you know, I bring before God all these things and I say, look how good I am. I did this and that, and I spoke wisdom this way, and we don't bring before him those things. But what we have done will be left at the grave, and hopefully it will be stewarded in others. The things we have done are the fruit of our lives, and so it does matter how we live and who we live for. He continues, again, I saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, or the battle to the strong, or the bread to the wise, or riches to the discerning, or favor to the skillful. Rather, time and chance happen to them all. And there's this idea, like, if this life is all there is, then why doesn't this life make more sense, right? In a world that made more sense under the sun, the race would always go to the fastest person, or the battle would always go to the strongest person. And yet it doesn't always work that way. Time and chance make life under the sun hard to understand. If you can remember back, this is months ago, so I'll give a refresher, but Pastor Corey came up and spoke, and she used the three views in a corn maze as an illustration, right? There's the inside, there's the outside, and then there's the bird's eye view. We live inside that corn maze, which is why life is so hard to understand and interpret, is because we see paths, and even if we have this educated guess of which path is the right path, it could be the perfect guess. Like, we have everything that we think makes it the right one, we could still walk into a dead end. That's why life is so confusing, and that's why we really need to trust the bird's eye view. I mean, God is the only one above all things. And so asking for his wisdom on, hey, all right, what path am I going to? Because you know, like, 10 years down the road, and I got right here, right now, where I could take this step and go. Time and chance make life really hard to understand. For certainly no one knows his time. Like fish caught in a cruel net, or like birds caught in a trap, so people are trapped in an evil time and it suddenly falls upon them. I mean, fish and birds are caught and they never expect it, and then comes their death. And just like them, death comes unexpectedly to us. It is described as cruel or evil because it was never the original design in the garden. In fact, death is one of the most evil things. And he switches gears here. And I promise we'll come back and we'll try to tie everything back up, right? He switches gears here. He's been talking about death. Now he's going to go back to one of his favorite subjects in the world, wisdom. So let's finish out this. I've observed that this also is wisdom under the sun, and it is significant to me. And he tells a little story. There was a small city with a few men in it. A great king came against it, surrounded it, built large siege works against it. And I'm thinking, man, that city is doomed. And they probably are too. But now a poor wise man was found in the city, and he delivered the city by his wisdom. Yet no one remembered that poor man. See, the city was outnumbered, outpowered, but a poor wise man was able to deliver the city through his wisdom, and yet the city did not care at all. They didn't even listen. They didn't care about what he had, what it accomplished. They only valued strength. And so Solomon says, wisdom is better than strength, but the wisdom of a poor man is despised and his words are not heeded. Wisdom has more value than strength, but commonly in our society, we flip it. Everyone recognizes strength more. And the idea, the core of this is that we don't need to waste our time living for the approval and praise of people. Do what's right. And don't worry about who notices. That too is living life to the full. If you have wisdom, bring it. And if people despise you for it, okay. Because in the economy of our world, a lot of things are flipped. And it is confusing and it is chaos. Do what's right and don't worry about who notices. The calm words of the wise are heeded more than the shouts of a ruler of fools. And these two statements are two different proverbs. Proverbs just being wise sayings, right? So he's culminating what he just said in these two little sayings. Calm words of the wise are heeded more than the shouts of a ruler of fools. Fools won't listen to wisdom. Simple. That's what he's saying, right? Wisdom is better than the weapons of war, but one sinner can destroy much good. Wisdom can be more effective than weapons, but because we've been talking about a world in hevel, unpredictability, uncontrollable, right? One sinner, one bad person can just destroy everything that has been worked for. Because life is always thrown in a tailspin. It's hard to understand, hard to interpret, and it's hard to make much of. So, these are the 18 verses. Now, as I promised, let's untangle this a little bit. Let's just talk about it. Let's flesh it out. In a world under the sun, Solomon wants us to sit in how crippling the reality of death truly is. For those who believe that we randomly ended up on this earth, and that when we die, we will leave just as randomly, which, I mean, to those that don't have a belief in God, I understand that. Like, that's the best I would explain it. Then the reality is this life is all there is. This life is it. Because you randomly came from nothing, you're here, and then you're going to randomly go to nothing, right? So this life, whatever you have, this is it. Live it, right? There's nothing beyond my physical existence or however many years on this earth where you must live life to the fullest. But Solomon is very clear in his evaluation. Like, if life is temporary, if even this existence is temporary, and the world is temporary, and those that you love are temporary, then you come, you make an impact, and you leave, but before what? What did you make an impact for? Like, it will be forgotten, you will be forgotten, the world will eventually not be. So what's the point, right? Like, what did we produce? That is hevel right there. That's vanity. That is the temporary nature of what he's talking about, is that the reality is, so what? And that's why this is a really bleak sermon today. So I'm going to leave, head out. No, everything comes from nothingness and returns to nothingness. So I guess the best we got, right, is to enjoy pleasure. Whatever gives us pleasure. That's the mantra. If nothing matters, then do whatever you like as long as it does not inhibit others from doing what they like. Right? But let me flip it. Let me present the other perspective. In a world under heaven, God created us and now sustains us. We have a purpose that spans beyond the random. So in this perspective, we aren't slaves to the temporary. Instead, we have a very real hope that we live and die for. So instead of random, God intentionally created us, and God will take us home upon our last breath. So I can now accomplish something beyond the temporary. And that should be very liberating to you, church. That we can do something that matters more than something that maybe works for a minute and then is gone one day, right? That there's something that actually we can do that is purpose-driven, that gives value to our life, that gives value to others. There is an eternity that we have access to because God loved us so much that he sent his own son to go and pay the debt that we owed. The sin I had accumulated, the sin that I owed, a large sum, if you're thinking money-wise, like, I owed so much money, and he paid it clean. All of it, entirely. And it's not only for me, but for every single person around me, which means that the purpose I have been given is to go tell others the treasure that I have found, to let them know that I want more for them than I do from them. For us to not hate our enemies, but to try to love them. And so here's some questions, just reflection-wise, right? Do you live recklessly, assuming that none of this matters, or intentionally knowing that all of this matters? Do you live for your own quick pleasures, or do you live for something greater than yourself? Is our existence temporary, or can we have impact on something eternal? And this is for you to reflect. Just honest questions. Because I know a lot of us probably never wrestle with broad scale things. These things scare me to think about, right? If I'm just in my room laying down, I don't really want to start thinking about this, because then I'm like, ooh, this is, you know, and then I just go on some kind of tangent, and next hour later, I'm thinking about like how dogs were created and like why did he create dogs that way? You know, it's one of those things. You get ethereal and you just keep going. But these are honest questions for reflection. If physical death is unavoidable, then we must wrestle with what life is meant to accomplish. I'm going to present that life is meant to accomplish three things. Check it against scripture. If you don't find it's biblical, throw it out, right? I believe it is. Life is meant for us to enjoy what God has given us, number one. Verse 7 in the chapter we just read, chapter 9, clearly says it, right? Enjoy your food, enjoy your drink, enjoy company, enjoy your luxuries, enjoy what you've got. Good gifts are meant to be enjoyed, and God has given us so many good gifts, so go travel. See God's beautiful creation. Make me jealous. Send me pictures, right? Hobbies. Go enjoy golf or crocheting or thrifting. Enjoy sex with your spouse if you have one. Enjoy food. I don't think it was an accident that God gave us taste buds. I want a good burger. Enjoy it. Enjoy these things to God's glory and acknowledge that it's just a gift from Him. That our breath is a gift from Him. So all these other things got to be a gift. That's cherry on top. And number two, life is meant for us to love God and love others. Our simple task is to love God, to spend time with Him and cherish Him the way a child loves, respects, and reveres a dedicated parent, right? That's what He wants from us. Literally relationship. He just wants us to love Him. And to love others, the harder task, to see them as created by God, worthy of your love regardless of their brokenness, worthy of the same forgiveness that you have received even though you didn't deserve it. And number three, life is meant for us to live for eternity on the mission to bring others with us, to live on mission, to understand that death is an imminent reality. That we have no idea what tomorrow brings. That's why we praise God for the breath right now. That today is the best and most reasonable day to sense an urgency for the spiritual sake of others. So that bitterness that we may hold towards a family member or a coworker or a neighbor might be more selfish than we even know or think about. That it may be more than just ignoring them. It's hating them. To not care what happens to them. If I found something free, totally free, available to every single person, and incredibly valuable, and I don't share it, then one of three things is true. Either I believe it isn't available to everybody, which if we read the gospel, we will learn that the hope of eternity is for everyone. That it's not incredibly valuable, that it doesn't actually have the value that we think it does, or that we don't like the person that we need to share it to very much. I mean, if I put this in monetary terms, right, instead of talking about eternity, if I said you found a way for every single person to get all the money of the lottery, and now let me tell you, I know this economy-wise will fall apart. You know, we're already falling apart. That it'll make it fall apart more. But let's just suspend disbelief, right? Let's say you found a way to give every single person you know or could tell the money from the lottery. That's huge, right? And it's free. And it doesn't take anything from you. It actually just gives something to them, right? Then if I'm not giving it to them, then I don't think they need the money, or I don't care about them, or I don't really think the lottery is very life-changing, right? Like, those are our options. Because it's a matter of the heart. So, this week, we must reflect on where our hearts are. We must evaluate and try to tear down some of these walls that might keep us from loving others fully, that cause us to maybe keep distance from God. Because walls exist. We need to see death for what it truly is, imminent, scary, ruthless, and see God for who he is, kind and secure and loving. Jesus Christ, the gospel, right? Jesus Christ came down, lived a perfect life, and was crucified on the cross for our sins. The very things that I do by hating my brother, or by watching what I shouldn't, or by murdering or stealing or whatever. He came down for that. The broken parts of me, the ones that are in shambles, that I might have hope beyond this life. So death is terrifying. Nothing more to say about it, right? Death is terrifying. But life after death is hope. And that's where I stand. I hold a hope that should my days come to an end, my spirit gets to live in eternity because Jesus rose from the grave, defeated death, and bought me a place. And that's incredible. If you would you bow your heads in prayer with me?